south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, after living in Latin America a while, after the honeymoon phase, you know, the newbie, starry-eyed, green gringo phase is over, there will be things that really get on your nerves. Of course, there will be the top 10 obvious things, the terrible, terrible drivers, mañana time, long lines at banks and government buildings, hygiene problems in restaurants and bathrooms, sloppy workmanship and poor attention to detail, etc., etc., etc. And you'd think all that stuff would be easily correctable, but only some of it is, and only really within your own personal sphere of influence. For example, within your own house, your domain, and or within your own business, if you own one. That's also part of your gringo advantage and why gringo businesses do so well here in Latin America. It's all about the details, training up your help and making your place first world. But as far as where you live at home, you can train up your maid and your gardener. They're not dumb. In fact, some of them are pretty smart and they catch on fast. But you'll never be able to do anything about the long lines, the bad drivers, mañana time, etc., etc. Those things are cultural. But you knew that already, right? Well, aside from all that, another irritable annoyance that you won't be able to change. Something I never even heard any gringos and expats talk about, except in the moment where it can be dangerous to your health. Now, you've heard me say before that all the first world building codes exist here in Latin America. They're in the municipality archives. In fact, somewhere in every large and small town's inspection department, there is a list of first world building norms that contractors are supposed to adhere to. And in some of the newer upscale subdivisions, almost all those codes are adhered to, at least 90% of them anyway. That includes office buildings, big malls, and commercial centers too. They're almost always built to first world codes and norms because international companies come in and build those things. But as mentioned in previous shows, if you violate some of those norms, builders can almost always get away with it because inspectors just don't come around. And I've talked to some of these inspector guys and they hardly even know the rules themselves. A government building inspection job is just a license to sit on your dead ass all day long and peck away at your phone. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh yeah. So then what's that irritating and sometimes dangerous pet peeve I'm talking about? Well, it's the fact that there's no uniformity in stairs or hand railings on stairs. Now, you might say, so what? Give me a flight of stairs and I'll manage them. Why should it matter how uniform or ununiform the stair heights or widths might be? The thing is, though, we're so used to walking up and down stairs. By the time you're 30 years old, you probably walked up and down 10,000 staircases. And your brain and your feet kind of automatically know the comfortable minimum and maximum stair height. That is, the distance between one stair to the next. Because they're all uniform up in the States and Canada and the first world. It's burned into our memories. When you talk about such things, they're technically called minimum and maximum stair, step, riser height and width. It's a well-known construction measurement and rule, violated over and over again in practically every Latin American house and commercial building. Again, why should it matter? You've got eyes, you can judge distances. Well, for one thing, if it's getting dark or a staircase is dimly lit, you could stub your toe or even take a nasty tumble. Every gringo and expat who's been down here a while has had a close call or worse. All right, let me explain. Now, in the States and Europe and everywhere, they have first world construction codes. The maximum stair step riser height, that's the distance between stair steps, is 7.75 inches. And the minimum rise height is 4 inches. So when you're constructing staircases, you got a nice acceptable range of distances, 4 inches minimum to 7 3/4 inches maximum. A lot of flexibility there, a lot of wiggle room. Though that doesn't seem to matter much here in Latin America. Oh, and there's another first world construction code that says the step riser height uniformity. That means the maximum variation between step heights from one step to the next. You know, as to not screw up your rhythm as you're walking up and down stairs, can be no more than 3/8 of an inch variation between successive step surfaces. Because you know how just one stair a little bit too high or too low can really throw you off if you're not aware of it. Well, let me tell you, here in Latin America, the violation of that code is the norm. In fact, every single house I've rented or built, even every one I've stayed in, has a number of those staircase errors. Now, of course, if you've got a really short or really tall stair sticking out like a sore thumb, if you're living in that house, you get used to it. Your brain, your subconscious, automatically conforms, even at night, with no lights. You don't trip on it, but visitors sure will. And we haven't even talked about open staircases, you know, where you can see through the stairs. They have a horizontal stepping surface, but no vertical. It's open. Well, the First World Code says that you must have the inner tread edge extend beneath the outer edge of the tread or stair above it. Well, good luck with that. I don't think any contractor here in Latin America even knows about that rule. And believe me, no inspector would ever call you out on it. That is, if you could ever get an inspector to come to your house. Not that you want them to come to your house. So let's review. Stairs of uneven height will screw with your walking rhythm. Nothing you can do about it. You better get used to it, so open your eyes. Well, that seems to be the norm down here, especially with older houses and commercial buildings, so keep your eyes open. Then there's that other problem of stairs that are too high, that is between one stair and the next one, that is over 7 3/4 inches, or too short, below 4 inches. You can complain, but it won't do any good. And if you fall and break your leg, remember, this is Latin America, so there's no one to sue. So then what's worse, stairs that are uneven in height from one stair surface to the next, or stair steps that are too tall or too short? Well, for my money, it's the stairs that are too short. And believe me, some of them are so short, sometimes a lip or a bump of a half inch to 2 inches tall will just pop up out of nowhere. If you've got 1 or 2 or 5 or 10 of those in your own house, you think you'd get used to them, right? Well, you do to a point, unless you've been drinking. Problem is, and I've done this myself, even years later, you'll still catch yourself cursing when you're going for that midnight snack. And the worst offenders of all are in Latin American bathrooms and showers. In fact, it's standard practice, though totally against building standards and rules, to have the shower stall base drop down a half inch or an inch below the main surface of the bathroom floor. So why do they do that when there's a big risk of tripping and falling on your ass? Because Latin Americans are so conditioned to having water drainage problems. You know, undersized plumbing pipes and all that. You've heard me speak about that many times. And by dropping the bathroom floor and the shower stall floor a half inch or so, it becomes kind of a catch basin for any kind of water overflows. So let me give you the setup, what the usual suspect Latin American bathroom is all about. You're walking down the hall, you open the bathroom door. We're talking about tile and concrete floors now. I'd say about 99% of all Latin homes and businesses have cement or tile floors. Very, very few of them have carpet or hardwood floors. And that's a good thing, again, because of all the water overflows down here. So anyway, you're walking down the hall to the bathroom. You open the door and suddenly you drop down 1 inch or more. I know you're probably thinking I could handle that. We all walk through door openings rather slowly anyway. It's much different though when you're walking out of the bathroom. You're likely to stumble or stub your toe on that 1 inch lip. Now, if you live there, of course, you do get used to it, sorta. All right. And then once you're in the bathroom and you proceed to the shower, you'll experience another instant drop of about a half inch to an inch or two. Very disconcerting at first because, well, it's something new. Something you haven't seen before in bathrooms back home. So again, we're used to walking up and down stairs and across floors on autopilot. Our brains assume each step height is the same as the step we took before it. So a surprise step that's taller, shorter, or has an extended lip can make you stumble or fall. And don't get me started on handicap facilities. That's a huge can of worms. By the way, when I was a young kid, I lived by Lake Michigan, went fishing a lot, and opened many cans of worms. And I can tell you firsthand, an open can of worms is not the chaos and madness you've been led to believe. By the way, all First World construction codes say that every staircase must have a handrail at a minimum of 34 inches above the riser, with a minimum of 1.5 inch clearance from the wall. Well, good luck with that. I'd say about a third of all the staircases in Latin America have no handrail at all. That means sometimes going up and down the stairs is a balancing act and you're on your own. By the way, did you know that First World codes say every stairway has to have a minimum width of 36 inches? Well, I can tell you contractors down here haven't heard about that rule either. You know, down here in Latin America, you'll routinely run into staircases that are so narrow. The average expanding American would have to butter up with Crisco. Oh, and there's another First World building norm that most Latin American contractors have never heard of either. That's the minimum vertical clearance or distance from a floor surface to the landing on the next floor, above or below. In other words, the headroom you have as you're walking upstairs to the next floor. You'll find out in a hurry that Latin American doorways and floor clearances were not designed for gringos or anyone 6 foot or taller. I know many gringos who cracked their noggins on overhead beams. I'm one of them. But thankfully, newer houses and commercial buildings have factored that in. But you tall guys out there, do keep that in mind if you're invited to one of your Latin neighbors' houses. Oh, and one more thing about bathrooms in Latin America. This time, it's something positive. It's a good thing. you'll notice that almost every bathroom has a little floor drain somewhere. You rarely see that in bathrooms up in the States. Well, that's because over the years, Latin Americans have learned their lessons about water leaks and certain water problems in general. Funny thing, though, many even go at the problem ass backwards. Instead of fixing a leaky roof, they'll count on the floor drain to handle the overflow, the floor drain being the collector of last resort. By the way, just because there's a floor drain doesn't mean that the floor is pitched correctly to move water down that drain. I've seen many floors where the cement contractor screwed that up royally. Oh well. In the States, you'd call your lawyer, right? Down here, you just open another bottle of tequila. Now, when I say that water damage and water problems are big issues down here, that's not hyperbole. I can't tell you how many houses, buildings, and restaurants I've been into that leak like a sieve. In fact, I've been in restaurants, nice restaurants, where during the rainy season, they've got buckets strewn all over the place. In fact, the Guatemalan International Airport that many of you will be flying into for the seminar, you won't get to see this because it's not the rainy season, but during the rainy season, on that walk down to immigration and the luggage carousel, you'll see a dozen or so plastic buckets placed strategically in the main walkway. Because when it rains, the roof leaks like a sieve, and it's fairly new, too. Oh, well, such is life. Details, details, huh? Oh, before I forget, I gotta tell you something funny. Expat Eddie just told me he's always got a few stories and is good for a laugh. You know how your kitchen microwave has a little glass platter that spins, right? And you know if something bubbles over or food drops on that plate, you take it out, wash it, and put it back on, but you have to align it with the three little slots in the center so it engages properly and spins as it should when you turn the thing on. Well, Expat Eddie calls that a cleaning lady IQ test. Because you see, over the years, he's had many cleaning ladies, and he's yet to find one who can actually align that thing properly. He says when his cleaning lady leaves at 5, he goes directly to the microwave oven and aligns that thing. He says she gets it right about 20% of the time, but it's pure luck. That's why he calls it the cleaning lady IQ test. Eddie, you're mean. Speaking of Expat Eddie, you know, a couple of months ago, I told a few Expat Eddie stories that hadn't quite resolved themselves yet. They didn't have an ending. One about that robbery he had when contractors came in to fix his window, and then he found $4,000 missing from his secret hiding place in that room. I guess it wasn't so secret. You might remember that. He called his general contractor on the carpet. His general contractor swore his men were honest. So Eddie spent another $750 to get those guys polygraphed. And if you remember, the cleaning lady passed with flying colors. She took it because she was in the house at that time, too. And the two glass and window installers failed. They even tried to use certain breathing techniques to fool the polygraph. But the polygraph guys were wise to that and picked up on it right away. So anyway, in the end, the general contractor who said that he would pay the $4,000 and the $750 to Eddie if his boys didn't pass the test, and when they didn't, he reneged. He said, get this, he didn't trust the polygraph guys to be accurate. Yeah, right, he just didn't like the results. It made him look like a fool, an idiot, though he never admitted it, but Eddie knew that's what the guy was feeling. He could see it in his face. Then Eddie said to the guy, if that's how you feel about it, there are 4 or 5 other polygraph outfits. You select the one you want. You pay the $750 this time. By the way, it was $250 a person to have a polygraph done. Then Eddie said to the guy, go ahead, get your own polygraph done. But aren't you just a little concerned? The results were so overwhelming against your two guys. They even got caught using countermeasures against the machine. If you really think another polygraph test is going to exonerate those guys, go for it. And the contractor said, that's just what I'm going to do. I'm going to hire another polygraph company of my choice. Well, a couple of weeks went by, even a month. Eddie called up the contractor. The guy flip-flopped again, saying he trusted his guys and didn't need another polygraph. So in the end, Eddie was out $4,000 plus the $750 for the polygraph. He got burnt all right. But Eddie wasn't without a plan. He figured he was going to cause at least $4,500 worth of damage to these guys. So he scanned the complete polygraph test and all the results. And he had the WhatsApp numbers of 8 of the guys that worked on his remodeling job. The plumber, electrician, tile guys, painters, solar installers, concrete guys. And Eddie sent those scans to all of the guys that worked on his property. And now, there's one thing for sure. You can count on the rumor mill and social media to do its dirty work. Eventually, those two guys will never work a construction job again. Now, for those of you listeners who missed the first part of that Expat Eddie story, I guess you'll just have to go back in the archives about 3 or 4 months. It's a good story and a lesson to gringos and expats who are building a house or remodeling. Now, the reason why I'm telling you the conclusion to this story is because I've got a ton of emails from people saying, you never finished that story, you never finished it. Well, that's because it was still a work in progress when it was first told. Speaking of Expat Eddie, there was another previous story told about him quite a while back, but never had a conclusion. Now, you longtime listeners probably remember me talking about Eddie's girlfriend, Claudia, from El Salvador. They've been going together maybe 7 or 8 years now, and were supposed to get married a couple of different times, actually. But it never did happen. In fact, they broke up for a while. And you'll never believe why. You wouldn't be able to guess in a million years. Now, you may have heard the saying, if you marry a Latino or Latino, you're married to the family, too. Well, it was Claudia's family that drove a wedge between Eddie and her. Now, if you remember how the story went, you know, Eddie travels a lot. And he has a beautiful house in an upscale subdivision in El Salvador. That's where Claudia's from, El Salvador. He met her there. Turns out Eddie was at a big event, a restaurant convention. I think it was at the Barceló Hotel in San Salvador, the capital. And Claudia was at that same event as a model. So anyway, they fell for each other. Eddie made his fortune in the restaurant business. They moved in together, and little by little, her family started knocking at the door. Her brothers and cousins coming around asking for jobs and loans. Dropping in on weekends to use his pool, eat his food, and drink his booze. And Eddie, the nice, calm, good guy that he is, and he is, put up with it for a long while till it finally got on his nerves. So he made a few rules. One was that he's never going to lend any money to her family, because he'd lent little bits here and there to family members, but never got reimbursed. That's normal. It's happened to me and practically every gringo who's been down here for a long while. My advice from experience has always been, if you're going to lend Latinos money, or anyone money, even your own family members, you're much better off telling them it's a gift, not a loan. And of course, they'll be falling all over themselves to tell you that you're going to get every cent back right on time. Yada, yada, yada. And really, I can vouch for this. That almost never happens. And you know what they say? The easiest way to lose a friend is to loan him money. But that doesn't work with family members. You lend them money, they don't pay you back. You're still stuck with them, their family. And you still have to look at their ugly mugs every Christmas and Thanksgiving. Unless, of course, you've got that plan B going and you're living in Latin America. That's one of the very positive secondary effects of getting out of Dodge. You can kiss those energy-sucking time vampire friends of yours and those family member parasites goodbye. We've all got a couple of those. I bet you're thinking of one or two right now. You know, when I first came down here, I ditched a few of those, and what a relief it was. Oh, and as for lending money to Latinos, almost none of us are immune to a hard luck story, right? There have been some times when my maintenance guy, cleaning lady, or some kid in the neighborhood nicked me for 5, 10, 20, maybe 50 bucks. After all, the maintenance guy, the cleaning lady, the guys who wash your cars, they're all living on the edge. So you help them out once in a while, as long as they're not boozers. Though I really like the way Bitcoin Dan gifts people money. I didn't say give, I said gift. G-I-F-T, gift. I've been to places with Bitcoin Dan, you know, restaurants and people's houses, where he'll slip 20, 50, even 100 bucks in local funny money into the apron of a cleaning lady or waitress. And he'll do it clandestinely too, knowing that they'll find it sooner or later, long after Dan is gone. You know, you really got to admire Dan for that, because most of us, when we give something, we kind of crave the instant acknowledgement, right? That so-called serotonin do-gooder's high that's actually been scientifically measured. Some people just need the recipient to smile and acknowledge it. Maybe even fawn a bit and shed a tear, too. That's why I'm always suspicious of dickhead do-gooder photo ops where some charity big shot is handing a check over to someone. Worse yet, sometimes it's a big old cardboard cutout prop check that takes two people to hoist up for the camera. Now, to me, there's something exploitive about that. It rubs me the wrong way. But back to Expat Eddie's story and what happened with him and Claudia. Because it does involve a few lessons for gringos and expats. Anyway, Eddie moved into this really nice high-end house in El Salvador. And after being hit up one too many times by Claudia's friends and relatives, he laid down a few rules. Like, for example, her family and friends could only come to the house if invited for pool parties and such. They couldn't just drop in unannounced with their swimming gear. And they weren't allowed to bring friends or acquaintances Eddie and Claudia had never met or didn't know. Well, that worked for a while, a couple of years, in fact. But as Eddie and Claudia traveled more and more, more often than not, Claudia's mother would house-sit while they were gone. And one of Eddie's rules was that if her mother was house-sitting, she couldn't have any people over. Especially a particular sister of Claudia's who was known to have sticky fingers. In fact, 2 or 3 years ago, Claudia thought she'd misplaced some jewelry. She had lots of nice jewelry. And of course, that could happen, and it could show up in the future sometime, too. Well, it turns out it did on her sister's Facebook site. That's when Claudia realized her own sister had stolen the jewelry and was wearing it herself. Then Claudia took inventory and saw that some of her shoes and clothing items were missing too. Yep, her sister again. Now, Claudia never did confront her sister to keep the family peace, and Eddie was pissed off about that. So Eddie decided to install a nice surveillance camera system all around the house, with some of the cameras stealthily concealed. After the cameras were first installed, that was a few years ago now, Eddie and Claudia went on another trip. They were gone for about 3 weeks. And when they returned, Eddie decided to play with his camera system. Have a look at the hard drive. See what the motion detectors had picked up in the last few weeks. And sure enough, Claudia's mother broke rule number one. She had people over. Worse yet, she had sticky fingers too. She was not only stealing little things from Claudia's closet, she was stealing food and edibles from their well-stocked kitchen pantry. It was all on camera, and Eddie was furious. And Claudia, once again, didn't want to start a family feud, so she kept her mouth shut. But Eddie laid down the law. No family at the house anymore. They're not invited. But going back to that business, if you marry a Latino or a Latino, you marry their family too. Well, Claudia could not or would not allow Eddie to banish her family completely. Because, once again, in Latin America, family is everything. They're really tight. Much more so than any gringo family I've ever met. So Eddie and Claudia feuded a while, and he caved a bit. He said, we can visit them, but they're not welcome in this house. They've disrespected me, he said, and I won't have that. So in the end, it caused a big rift in Claudia and Eddie's relationship. So Eddie went off on a few trips of his own, by himself. He's got dough, so he's always looking for investment opportunities. He went to Panama, Roatan, Honduras, Dominican Republic, and Puerto Rico. He bought a townhouse and a high-rise. He even bought a piece of a casino. And as far as Claudia, he gave her an ultimatum. He said, it's either me or your family. I'm not going to live in El Salvador anymore. I'm going to sell that house. In fact, Eddie had a few buyers on the line, gringo buyers. He said, I've got a place in Panama, the DR, and Honduras. We can take a pick or split our time between those places, but we're not going to live in El Salvador. In fact, that's not the first time I heard a similar story from a gringo expat married to a Latina. The only way you're going to separate them from their family is to move at least a couple of hundred miles away. Of course, a lot of Latinos and Latinas have some really nice family members who become really good friends to you. And you wouldn't think of moving to avoid them. But believe me, that's not the first time I've heard stories of family members who are nothing but leeches. Or worse, sticky-fingered thieves. So anyway, after about a month and a half of Eddie scouting around, ostensibly for new business opportunities, Claudia made a decision to go back to Eddie, no matter where they lived. And they made a deal, because Latinos and Latinas can never be separated completely from their families. Not for too long, anyway. Yep, that's right, no matter how dysfunctional they are. Hey, come on, yours isn't. I know mine is. So anyway, for Christmas holidays and certain other events, Claudia pops back to see the family in El Salvador and all is well, though always bearing gifts for the dysfunctional family. On Eddie's tab, of course. But he's loaded, so he doesn't care, as long as she's happy. Oh, and by the way, Eddie says, being Latina and therefore addicted to social media, she checks in with some of her closer family members at least once a day. Which provides another big example of the difference between Latino families and gringo families. For example, Eddie, being an only child, was really close to his mother. And she, formerly Texas trailer trash, as Eddie describes her. Of course, that was before Eddie made his mark in Latin America. Now, she's living the good life, though not too far from the old trailer corp. Her choice, Eddie says. Anyway, Eddie checks in with her on the Signal app every week or two. That's pretty normal for gringos living down here in Latin America, as far as maintaining certain connections with folks back in Cleveland, Milwaukee, or Texas. Meanwhile, Latinas like Claudia, when far away from friends and family, they check in routinely, once, twice, sometimes five times a day, and almost exclusively with What's Up. They have no idea that a much better encrypted app, like the Signal app, that saves no data at all, even exists. And they don't even care. However, a while back, Eddie got Claudia to use the Signal app exclusively when talking to him. He trained her, he said, and it wasn't easy. He taught her never to put her passport, cellular, or any kind of bank documents on WhatsApp or any other platform. By the way, you know what's really irksome to me is when you're traveling these days with this COVID-idiot crap, airlines and governments are forcing people to upload sensitive documents. Photos, passports, COVID-idiot stuff. None of that's secure, you know. It's just more data mining. For example, all this COVID testing remotely using laptops and smartphones, that's the latest thing, you know. It's all super invasive and pretty disturbing. In fact, one of our listeners, Wes, who's coming to the Expat Insider Seminar, he filled me in on this at-home remote COVID-idiot testing thing. Seems to be all the rage now. He says, Johnny, I ended up getting this kit ordered online. And then he gives me the link. It's an Abbott Laboratory at-home test, but I found out, he says, they're not all the same. He says, you get two rapid antigen tests for $70, which includes the shipping. You can order at Optum, but online testing is done using eMed.com, which sells the kits to you. So Wes says this particular at-home rapid antigen test is $70 for two. Oh, by the way, Wes, I got an email from a guy in Germany the other day. He told me they have rapid antigen tests there for, guess how much? About 80 cents. That's about a 4,000% markup. Talk about a massive gouge. I wonder who's getting that dough. Why, Abbott Labs, of course. Anyway, Wes goes on to say the directions are non-existent, other than the box telling you to set up a Navika account and to not open the box until instructed to do so. So I got the two tests in overnight mail. The Navika app is a free download to your smartphone. You can use your Google email account if you wish. I created a separate account, he says, using my email. And they test your email to see if it's valid. Then you're instructed to go to emed.com. You use a Navika account login for emed.com. It asks you a few questions like, are you using this for travel, etc. I couldn't find a way to set up an appointment for the online portion, though. It's first come, first serve, it looks like. As for me, he says, having done a travel test before, the online sequence would be something like this. After logging in and answering questions, a live body comes online to proctor you to show an ID. You swab your nose, and you use that for the test kit. Anyway, Johnny, that's how those at-home online tests go, says Wes. You show the results to the proctor online, too. Your test result is now online in 15 minutes and printable. You can also display it via the Navika app if you have internet access. All right, Wes, thanks for that, and I'll be seeing you in a couple of days at the seminar. Though what you said about that test does reinforce my worst fears about this strange new world we're rapidly slipping into where you've got no privacy at all. Everything's online, accessible by every and all government agencies, including all manner of hackers and no-goodniks, too. It's sad to think what it's become. The COVIDiot crisis was the perfect setup. But luckily, you have options. You know, in Latin America, governments are weak, toothless, under-motivated, and underfunded. Exactly how you want your government to be. Oh, and one last thought from Expat Eddie. He gets questions all the time from newbie gringos and expats who don't speak any Spanish. They see him physically as just slightly above average. A 6, maybe a 7, all dressed up on a great day. Yet he's with Claudia, a spectacular 10. He says newbie green gringos ask his advice on how to impress a beautiful Latina, since he's obviously got the knack. And Eddie just laughs and says, man, you've got that gringo advantage. That, he says, and the ability to crack open a difficult pickle jar. Believe me, he said, that's more than enough to impress the ladies. But if you're on the Gringo Tourist Trail, all bets are off.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.